A well-paired wine can turn a good meal into a memorable experience. And when we're ringing in a new year, a sparkling wine makes it even more special. Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Choosing wine can seem tricky, but Jessica Bell is here to help. She is the founder and CEO of My Wine School, and she wants to make wine accessible and fun for all of us. Today, Jessica joins us from our WPR studios in Milwaukee. And Jessica, always fun to have you with us. Wish we were in the same room.
I know. We could be sharing a glass of wine.
Exactly. Although I have to say, Larry is off, as you mentioned yesterday on the air. He's having some eye surgery. And So he was sad to miss you. And I think it made him feel just a little better that you and I would not be imbibing without him.
Right. So we will not leave him out of our wine.
Next time we will, for sure. Well, you know, it's a great time of year for all kinds of celebrations. You know, a lot of people are enjoying meals with friends and family over the holidays. How can we choose a dinner wine or maybe two that will please a range of tastes and not bust the budget?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are just so many different wines out there. And then you add to that all the different palates that exist. And it really becomes difficult to find something that will just be across the board, a success. And I think what you want to do is find wines that are what I call crowd pleasers, things that just people gravitate toward. So some things, usually people will either go in the red or white direction. And if you're going for a white, something that really works across the board nicely is a Sauvignon Blanc. And the reason is that it has a good amount of fruit, which will satisfy the people who are looking for something on the sweeter side, but it still actually has zero to very little sugar. So people who like their white wines drier will like it as well. And the acid is a little higher on the Sauvignon Blanc, which when you have anything with high acid in your wines, it's going to taste even what people describe as drier. So Sauvignon Blancs are great. And the places I like to look for them are Chile has great values. They're really, they've got a lot of that fruit I was talking about, but because Chile is on the ocean, there's a very cold ocean current, which makes the climate a little cooler, which gives you that acid. So Chilean Sauvignon Blancs are great, but I also like a little bit of the old world Sauvignon Blancs. So Sancerre, if you want to spend a little bit more money, will be a Sauvignon Blanc. So Sancerre is the region, but by law, all their white wines will be Sauvignon Blanc. And those are going to range in the price points between closer to 15 to 25. So you're going to spend a little bit more. They're going to be less of the tropical fruit you find in Chile, more of the citrus, a little bit more of a stony taste to it, which sounds kind of strange, but eating stones is not usually on people's menu.
So would you say, because sometimes you hear wines described as having a little mineral taste to it, would that make it stony?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I usually don't want to be like, it tastes like dirt, because then it sends people running in the opposite direction. So a prettier way of saying is, it tastes like stones. So stones, or that people say minerality, those are what we describe as being more common in old world wines.
And can you spell Sancerre for people?
Sure. Sancerre. And Judith, you say it so pretty. I slaughter it. I put the Milwaukee accent on it, or the Wisconsin accent.
But you know what? Sometimes it helps to hear it more in your own accent to be able to remember it and repeat it. So that's fine. We give them the best of both worlds.
Right. And I bring those up because those are pretty easy to find. And that's the thing with wine, is I could suggest these specific brand names or these crazy, and I'll give you some today. I'll give you some suggestions on new things you want to try maybe or look for. But unfortunately, you go to the wine store and you take these recommendations, and if they're too esoteric, you're never going to find them.
Right.
But Sancerre, almost every wine store is going to have that. Sauvignon Blanc, Chile has great, like I said, but you can also find them from California. I like my Sauvignon Blancs from cooler climates. It just gives it a little bit more of that crispness that you're looking for.
And I would like to put a plug in for a very good Wisconsin wine. I have taken Wallersheim's Prairie Fumée to a lot of gatherings, and it really seems like one of those whites that kind of crosses everyone's tastes.
Yeah, no, it really does, because it is what we call off dry. So it's not completely dry, meaning zero sugars, 0 grams of sugar. It has just a little bit, but some people might be turned off to hear that, but what you have to understand is that there's really high acid, because Wisconsin is about as cool of a winemaking climate you can have, or grape growing climate you can have. And so I make the analogy of lemonade. When you have a glass of lemon juice, it's very acidic, but then you add a little sugar in it, it doesn't get sweet, it just gets less acidic. And so that's the way to look at something like Prairie Fumé. Yes, it has a little bit of sugar in it, but because the acid is so high, what we're looking for actually is balance. And that Prairie Fumé is wonderfully balanced, and it's been critically acclaimed. I mean, I think we don't realize it because it's from our state, but it wins awards all over the country.
And it's not going to break the budget either.
Oh, no. I think that one comes in between 10 and 15.
Yeah, so. I'd say even closer to 10. We're talking with Jessica Bell. She is the founder and CEO of My Wine School, which is based in Chicago and Milwaukee. You can find My Wine School online at mywineschool.com. She's happy to answer your wine questions today. You can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Jessica, I actually put the picture up on our Facebook page of you ready to go behind the microphone in our Milwaukee studio.
So, I said a small miracle I made it. I had one of those mornings, you know, where just nothing was coming together. And oh, man, but I made it.
Well, good. And we're so glad to have you with us. So, you know, obviously lots of meals and great white wines. What about on the red end of things?
Yeah, red, what you're probably going to want to look for are wines that are going to have a little bit of a lighter body and higher acid. And the reason is because, especially I think holiday meals, there's always this almost sweet component to it, whether it's dried fruits or, you know, there's just this sweetness that I think you want to have something that's going to go across the board. And I really find a wine like Pinot Noir. And I know these are really simple suggestions, and I'm happy to give some other kind of out there ones. But Pinot Noir is really going to be great. And the reason is it's high acid, low tannin. So that's going to make it a great food wine. But it's really an aromatic grape, meaning it's going to give it – it's still going to have a punch to it. So it won't overwhelm the food, but it won't be trampled by the food either. So those are some – that's – you know, and for that, again, Chile is a great place to look. I think that might be something that people don't know. Specifically, a region called Casablanca in Chile is a fantastic place to find values on your Pinot Noirs. And then if you want to spend a little bit more and you want to try something different in Pinot Noir, look for New Zealand Pinot Noirs. People, I think, often look at the Oregon ones and maybe the Burgundy in France. And those are great, too. But something a little different is New Zealand. They are outstanding in New Zealand.
And just going back to something you would recommend something with a little less tannin. And correct me if I'm wrong, but more tannin means you get that kind of that feel on your tongue that I think for some people is what they don't like about red wines. I'm not sure how to describe that.
Well, here, I'll help you out because I've only done it about a million times. tannin is it's basically plant material that gives plant structure. And so it's in a lot of different foods and drinks we have. And the most commonly known one is coffee. So whenever you have a black cup of coffee, you get this drying sensation in your mouth. And it's because tannin actually binds to your saliva. And then as you swallow, it drags it down your throat, which dries out your mouth. And so that tannin can come in all different degrees of dryness, as a lot of people describe it. But that's what tannin is. So if you want to really, you know, figure out what it feels like, have a cup of black coffee or black tea, you know, really strong tea, and you'll really feel tannin isolated. And then the next time you have wine, a red wine, and tannin only comes in red wine, really, because like I said, it's structural plant material, so it's in the skins of the grapes. And white wines they spend little to no time on the skins. And red wines, they get their color almost entirely from skins. So you're going to get the skins adding color and tannin.
We are talking with Jessica Bell of My Wine School, and we are going to cover a whole lot more, but we also have some listeners who would like to join in. So why don't we go to the phones? Jacob in Onalaska is up first. Hi, Jacob.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I love the show. I am a bit of a newbie as far as getting into the wine culture and whatnot. I've only tried a few And a few that I like are, like, a good mead. I know I've tried a brand called Stinger Mead that was very good, and I like a good Riesling. I was wondering if there are any brands that are similar. I want to try and get into a red wine. I haven't really found one that I like so far. So is there any advice that you can give me that, based on the ones that I've liked so far, that would ease the transition into a red wine?
Sure.
And I'll take my answer off the air.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Thanks, Jacob.
Yeah, definitely. It's so, and that's common when people first start to drink wine. They typically start with off dry or sweeter whites, and then they gradually will try new things like maybe drier whites or reds. And if you want to try reds, something that's really popular and very easy to find on the market right now are what we call red blends. And actually, I would say the cheaper the better, because they're usually going to be a little on the sweeter side. And I'm trying to think, I'm trying to think of some of the, Apocalypse, I think it's, I'm blanking on the name, but there's a, if you go to pretty much your grocery store, you'll be able to find these. Ask for the off dry or sweet red blends.
Is it Apothic Red?
Apothic.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have our producer Brienne, who just popped that up on our Yahoo Messenger here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, because I've got about a million brands flying through my head, and Apocalypse is a little darker. Apothic. So that's one that I know is across the board at places where I think you have found the mead and the Riesling. And so look for that, or ask for other red blends. Another thing you could do is get into a Moscato. That's really common right now, and that's going to have that sweeter, fruitier profile to it, or Moscato d'Asti. Those are some great places, I think, for you to try some new things.
What about a Gewürztraminer for someone who likes Riesling?
Yeah, and usually Gewürztraminers are going to be fuller-bodied, off-dry, and they are really aromatic. So you're going to get a lot of rose petal and a lot of floral notes. So it's going to be less fruit and more florals, but it's a really beautiful wine. That was actually, as I made a list of some holiday suggestions, Gewürztraminer, as well as Chenin Blanc, which is actually Vouvray. So in France, the wines are known as they're known regionally, and a region in France is Vouvray. The grape they use is Chenin Blanc. So, Jacob, another one to look for is what we call Vouvray, but Vouvray comes in all different styles. So you want the sweeter one. So look for like a demi-sec or even a sec. I know that sounds like dry, but that's actually not dry. And but demi-sec would be a great one for you to look for. And those are great holiday wines. And what I really wanted to talk about those about was they're great cheese wines. Mm. So Riesling, Chenin Blanc, Gewürztraminer. I know there's a lot of cheese plates over the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Those are ones that
especially in Wisconsin. Right?
Yeah, right? As there should be. And that will go, if you have a cheese plate that starts with a goat cheese, goes to a nice aged cheese, to a blue cheese, that will go across the cheese plate beautifully, without really having any big conflict with any of the cheeses.
And that's a good point, because a cheese plate, especially done kind of the traditional French way, has an aged cheese, a blue, and a goat cheese. And so that's a lot of different profiles to try to match something with.
Right. Like if you did the Sauvignon Blanc for the goat cheese, that'd be beautiful. But then that with a really old aged cheddar wouldn't work so well, and vice versa. You might want to put like a nice hearty Merlot or, cab with that cheddar. But that's not really going to go so nicely with your goat cheese.
Talking with Jessica Bell of My Wine School. And we are talking about holiday wines, both for meals, and also we will talk about sparkling wines to ring in the new year. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Brienne Chasso, our on-air producer today. I hope you'll stay tuned, not just for more great wine information from Jessica Bell, but because today at 11:45, Rick Cini of FairCompare.com is here. As always, he'll have great travel advice and answers to your air travel questions. That's coming up at 11:45. Right now, we are talking about choosing a great bottle of wine with Jessica Bell of My Wine School. And Jessica, Dennis in Ripon has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I'm just wondering, what is a port wine? What makes it different?
Sure. Other than being absolutely delicious. I'm a big fan of port.
Yeah, and a perfect holiday wine,
it's
too.
True.
So, Dennis, great question. You know, I'm going to give you a little technical answer. It's interesting because people often wonder, actually, what's the difference between sherry and port? Because what we think of is that sherry and port are both sweet wines. But what sherry and port share is that they're fortified. So that means it starts out as wine. So we take our grapes, we start to ferment the grapes into wine, and then at some point during that fermentation, brandy, which is actually a grape-based spirit, is added to the wine. And that is what a fortified wine is. So both sherry and port are fortified. Now, what makes port port is that fortification comes in the middle of fermentation. So the grapes start off with a lot of sugar, and they start to ferment. And then the brandy is added. And what that brandy does is it rises the alcohol level to, say, anywhere between usually 18 to 20%. At that percentage, fermentation can no longer happen. So it arrests or stops fermentation. And what that does is all of a sudden we have now a beverage that is really high in alcohol, 18 to 20%, because we added brandy, but the fermentation was stopped prematurely. And so we have a lot of the grape sugars remaining, which is what makes it sweet. So port will always be sweet because the fortification happens during fermentation. And that's what makes port different from sherry. Sherry actually always starts dry and then something sweet is added back. And I think what's interesting about port is that people think it's sweet because there's sugar in it, and that's absolutely false. Port is sweet because it's just natural, good old grape sugar that just hasn't been fermented into alcohol.
That I did not know that. I didn't know the difference between them. So that's good to know. Well,
thanks. And it's a great, like we were saying, it's a great holiday wine. And you can port comes from the region of Oporto in Portugal, and that's really what people refer to as port. But you can also find ports in places like Australia has some great ones. Yalumba makes some award-winning ones. And then also they have some really inexpensive ones. And then even California makes some ports. But port in Portugal is really a fun place to look for. A relatively inexpensive type is called Ruby Port, and that'll be anywhere from $12 to $20.
And so port originally comes from Oporto in Portugal, but obviously it's not one of those controlled names if they're calling it port if it's from Australia and other places.
I would say not yet.
Okay.
They're pursuing it. There's a lot of places in France, like Champagne, that you can't use the word champagne if it doesn't come from the region of Champagne. Port wants the same protection. And in some places, I think in the EU, they actually have it. Outside of the EU, though, the other countries like the US and Australia haven't signed anything saying they would protect port. And the explanation they give is that port is more of a style and less, it's more known
the process,
as a style.
Yeah.
Rather than the place. And obviously Oporto says, well, how close can you get? Oporto, port, you know.
Right.
But that's that. I anticipate probably in the next decade or so it might be protected.
And so actually that's a really nice transition, because sparkling wine is often used to ring out one year and ring in the next. And we often use the shortcut word champagne for sparkling wine. But as you just said, real champagne, like on the label champagne, can all only come from that region in France.
Correct. And the reason they do that is because they actually spend a lot of time and money to make a specific style and also a specific quality. Champagne is high quality sparkling wine. And so they really want to protect that name so that someone in a different country makes a cheap, horrible champagne and someone for the first time tries this cheap, horrible champagne and thinks all champagne is bad. And so it's really a protection of all these small farmers who are their livelihoods depend on it. And what has happened is that other regions have come up with their own names to indicate that they're using the same process as champagne, so this high-quality production method, but they're not actually from Champagne. So if you like champagne but you don't want to spend the money, which is usually about $35 to $40 retail, then in France, if it uses the same process but it's not from that small region of Champagne, it's called Cremant, and that's spelled C-R-E-M-A-N-T. Spain uses Cava, and then the rest of the world really uses some iteration of the word traditional method. So in America, some of my favorite values, like Roeder Estate, is actually a champagne house making sparkling wine in California. And if you look at their label, it'll say traditional method sparkling wine. And that means they're using the same process, but they're just making it in champagne. And it's, I think it's about $25, and you could fool anyone, not anyone, but a lot of people, that it is real champagne.
And what about Prosecco?
Prosecco is going to be made in a slightly different way. So we call the champagne method traditional. And the reason it's so intense is that they're basically making champagne in each bottle that's sold to you. And I won't get into the specifics of that, but that is a costly method of making wine, bottle by bottle. Whereas Prosecco is going to be made sparkling in a tank. And I should back up. The place where we get bubbles from is the process of fermentation. So fermentation is sugar eats yeast and we get wonderful alcohol. But another byproduct of that is CO2. And if fermentation happens in a closed vessel, that CO2 goes back into the wine. And that's how we get our bubbles. So traditional methods or champagne methods do that second fermentation in bottles, whereas Prosecco is going to do a huge quantity of wine in a tank at one time and then bottle it. And as a result, it's cheaper. It's cheaper, but it also has a certain style that's going to be fruitier. Some will have a little bit more sugar, but for the most part, Prosecco is actually dry. If you're looking for a sweeter sparkling, then you really want to look for like the Moscato d'Asti. Some of the Lambruscos have been sweet in the past, or you look for the word demi-sec or sec.
And actually, Lisa in Green Bay has something to say about Moscato d'Asti, and let's go there. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Hi.
Your guest is so informative, and I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, I'm glad.
Thank you.
I just had a quick share. I spent some time in Italy this summer, and
lucky you.
I was in. Yes, it was fun. I was in Venice, and I was with an Italian woman, and we were kind of taking the back roads to some of these. You can really get lost in Venice because a lot of the streets aren't labeled. But we were determined to find a place to eat where the locals ate. And I'm a red wine person, so I was looking. I usually like something full-bodied and somewhat dry. But it was so hot, and I just didn't really want to go for the red wine. So I asked her, what are you going to order? And she said, I'm going to order a Bellini. And I had to order it, too, because I watched them put some fresh peach slices in a blender, and they took the Moscato d'Asti and mixed it in with the blended fresh peach on ice, and it was just delicious.
That sounds so awesome.
That sounds great.
Yeah. Well, and you know, that's a great, like I was going to say, you know, a holiday, maybe brunch wine or, you know, I mean, still, even though it's cold, it's great for the morning, you know, I mean, but that's a traditional one that is so good. And another thing that you mentioned made me think of some other ideas for you too, is that when we think of Lambrusco in the United States, we think it's sweet, but the Italians actually, for the most part, drink it dry. Mm-hmm. And it's making a comeback right now in the U.S. where you can find dry, red, sparkling Lambrusco. And the reason I thought of that is that on a day that's hot like that, or you don't feel like, you know, room temperature wine, you can have these dry, red Lambruscos that are served slightly chilled. They've got some effervescence to give you that you know, refreshment, but you still have your dry red wine. And those are a fun one. And especially on the table for the holidays, I'm a sucker for something. Things looking pretty. And the table with sparkling red wines for Christmas and other holidays is just fabulous. And it tastes good, too.
I try that. It's funny you mentioned Lambrusco because that most reminds me. I tried to duplicate the country wines that I tasted with the Italians in the South that, you know, make their own brew of wine. And it's always a higher proof, and it just has this sweet but really aged sort of taste that is different. And the only thing that I could think that would come at all close to it was the Lambrusco, and so I would definitely try that.
Yeah, and then
thank
I have one so more. Yeah, you bet. I have one more recommendation for you and others who like the dry red Italians. Something that's new—it's new to America, not new to Italy—but we're seeing more and more of it. So you might be able to find it, but it's very different. It's not your Chianti or Sangiovese or Barolos or Barbarescos. It's called Sagrantino, and it's spelled S-A-G-R-A-N-T. T-I-N-O, and it's very much like a Cabernet Sauvignon. So people really enjoy it, and it's something to ask your local wine store about. If they don't have it, ask them to get it.
There you go. Thank you so much for that story, Lisa. It sounds like I've been in those situations where you're overheated traveling, and sometimes one of those beverages is just what you need to perk you right back up.
Oh, it sounds fabulous.
Dot in Manitowoc is up next. Hi, Dot.
Good morning.
Hi.
I would like to know if a wine is compromised if it's in a glass, plastic, or a bag. Do you prefer that type of container when you serve a wine?
Sure. So you're saying when it's served or when it's bottled or packaged?
Bottled and shipped, of course.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the wine. If it's a wine that's a little bit more expensive, it's going to be a wine that you're going to hold on to for more than, say, a couple months, or maybe a year or more, or even up to 5 to 10 years. Obviously, you want the glass with the traditional cork closure. And the reason for that is that it's just time has proven that wines will age and do well in glass bottles with cork closures. Now, on the other hand, most of what we drink in the world right now, it's over 90% of the wine produced, is made for immediate consumption. And at that point, then it becomes less important how it's served and more important of what you want, how you want your wine experience to be. So, you know, what I'm seeing a lot is that people are having wine at the tailgates. They're having wine in the backyard. There is not, obviously, a special occasion thing anymore. And to do that, wine sometimes has to come in other ways other than glass, because glass is just not permitted, or it's not safe, or it's not easy to carry. And also just environmentally, glass is not as environmentally friendly, really, as a lot of some of the other packaging solutions. Something we're finding a lot of is wine on tap is really mm-hmm. environmentally a great option for restaurants, and I have absolutely no problem with it. It's wine that's made to be consumed within a year of release. And so once you get to the point of that the wine's okay, then it comes down to what do you want from your experience. And I think if we drink from glass, we feel we drink a little slower. We take a little bit more time with it because it can break. Whereas, you know, when you're outside on a, you know, patio for a barbecue, you don't want to be dainty or trying to be careful or worrying about broken glass. So plastic at that point becomes perhaps a better option.
Thanks for that call, Dot. And you can join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller, visiting with Jessica Bell of My Wine School. Well, all this talk about sparkling wines, what kind of foods go well with sparkling wines?
Pretty much everything, which is why I love sparkling wine. I think we usually think of sparkling wine for before or after a meal or celebration. And I always tell people, if you want, sparkling wine really can take you from, say, your first course, because sparkling goes great with salads, but it's got enough of a punch often that it can take you through your main course. Now, if you're looking at doing a sparkling for a main course, what I would recommend is going up the scale in price a little so that it can withstand, say, a main course. Something else to look for is that your sparkling wine has a red grape in it. I know that sounds weird. Mm. It's not actually, your sparkling wine won't be red, but it'll have, say, Pinot Noir in it. So champagne is made of primarily Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And when I'm looking for a white wine to just have with, say, a salad, I might have what's called a Blanc de Blanc. So a white sparkling wine from white grapes, which are Chardonnay. Now, if I'm going to do one with, say, even a steak or something big, I'll look for something called a Blanc de Noir, which is a white sparkling wine from Noir or red grapes or Pinot Noir grapes. Mm-hmm. And your sparkling wine will still be absolutely usually clear, totally transparent, but it'll be made from red grapes. And what that's going to give your sparkling wine is just more body and more oomph to really get it through a main course.
I know that for some people, the idea of opening a bottle of sparkling wine is kind of terrifying because they're, you know, afraid they're going to shoot a hole in the ceiling or put somebody's eye out. But what are kind of some of the basics for feeling comfortable opening a bottle of sparkling wine?
First and foremost is do it a lot. So pop open a lot of bottles.
I like that advice.
I know, right? Because really the more you do it, the just the easier it's going to get. I mean, I remember my first official time opening it, I was just had started working as a sommelier at the Modern in New York City, and they asked me, do you know how to do this? Because I was about to do it at a table. I was like, oh, yeah. I didn't want to admit I didn't know how to do it. So I go to the table and I open it, and it just, you know, this is quiet dining, very fine dining, and it just pop. I mean, huge pop. The whole restaurant stopped, looked at me, and I was utterly embarrassed. And what I learned very quickly in about 2 minutes after that, as I was taken aside, is that the best way to do this is you're going to have the cork. Let's say for me, it's my right hand. So you have the cork in your hand and the bottle in your other hand. And it does make sense to put a towel over your wrists. I've had friends who have the bottle has exploded in their hands. And that doesn't happen often, but it can. If there's an imperfection.
Like the actual bottle explodes.
The bottle, yeah. Oh, wow. Because we don't realize that the pressure in a bottle of champagne is equivalent to the tire of a double-decker bus. There's a lot of pressure. And those bottles are made to withstand it. So if you look at it, these bottles are thick glass. They'll have a huge, what we call, bunt on the bottom. That gives it more structure. There's all these things that they have built into the bottles. But sometimes there's a fault or like an imperfection in the glass bottle. And it can explode. And that's why you see the sommeliers with the towels draped over their arms. It is to maybe wipe up some of the drips and what have you. But it really also is for protection from, say, a bottle that's going to break. Mm. So definitely, if you've got that around, do it. The chance of happening are low, so don't get too paranoid about it. But like I said, you actually keep the cork steady. You don't twist the cork. You twist the bottle. So you twist from the bottom with, say, your left hand or whichever way you want to do it. And what you'll start to feel is the cork starting to give or starting to come out. And you actually push the cork back in and then do this tilting with your wrist to kind of ease it out. And it's easier to show, you know, in person, obviously. But what you're trying to do is to have it almost gas out. So you just hear it shh. When it comes out, not a pop. I mean, maybe New Year's Eve you break that rule. But
only with a cheap bottle because you don't want it spraying all over either.
Well, yeah. And actually what happens is when it pops like that, you're losing the effervescence that they just spent all this, like I mentioned earlier, all this time and energy to get into the bottle. And you really just kind of like let it all go in the first, you know, minute. So it's kind of nice to keep it in there. And another way to actually keep it from going over, Judith, is to make sure your bottle is well chilled. If the bottle is starting to like foam over, it's because the wine isn't cool enough. So just get it on ice right away. Because it's definitely not cool enough if it's oozing over. It's pretty when it does that.
It is, that's such a waste, really.
Right.
Talking about those bubbles, it seems like sometimes the bubbles vary in size in sparkling wines. What does that mean?
It's really how it was made. So the smaller it is usually the better quality it is. Not always, but so if you look at about a glass of champagne, high quality champagne, usually the bubbles will be really fine, small, and what we call like a regular bead of them. Whereas an inexpensive Prosecco, something that was tank method or not done in this time and labor intensive way, we'll usually have larger bubbles and not as a regular bead that comes, you know, beads form where there's imperfections in the glass, but then once they're started, you know, the champagnes will have these really almost like look like strings floating.
Oh,
in the drink.
So that's it's actually the glass that determines where those streams of bubbles are?
Yep. There's actually champagne glasses that have very, very small, almost invisible etches at regular intervals in the glass so that the beads come up at a regular interval. But most of the time you'll have the bubbles are going to come up where there's imperfections or a piece of dust or whatever, you know, some just little things.
Mm-hmm.
And then also if you don't have bubbles but there's bubbles in the champagne, just rinse your glasses out because soap will kill your bubbles almost immediately.
Mm.
So you'll definitely want to, if for some reason you're not having bubbles, but there are bubbles in the champagne or in the sparkling wine, just rinse your glasses.
Wow, that's good to know because, you know, the bubbles are more than half of the fun.
It's all about the bubbles.
Well, Jessica, you are leading a wine trip to Spain next year. First of all, why Spain?
I lived in Spain for a couple of years, worked at a winery there, and Spanish major, and I'm fluent in Spanish, and I love Spain, and I don't know, the list goes on, but this will be our third trip. I take a group of about anywhere from 15 to 20 people. This year, it'll be a lot of fun because I'm joining up with my sister, who's a chef, opening her second restaurant.
Another one.
Yeah, fun stuff. She's opening a brew pub now. She's got a butcher shop, a cafe that's been critically acclaimed, one of the top restaurants in Milwaukee, according to different restaurant critics. And she actually had her own restaurant in Spain. So we're going to go to wineries every day, but we're also going to be doing going to like ham farms to see, because they're known for making ham, these unbelievable hams. We're going to go to a cheese farm. We're going to go harvest some white asparagus that they're known for. So really get into the food culture and wine culture.
Wow. And when is that taking place?
That is end of May, May 25th to the 29th.
Wow.
And I hear that you're going on a trip, too.
It's
When's
true.
Yours?
There's a WPR trip to France in May also, although a little earlier, May 6th through the 16th. And I get the real privilege of going with a bunch of WPR listeners. And we are starting and ending in Paris, but it's mainly Normandy and Brittany. And so we'll be, of course, there'll be some wine, but we'll also be focusing on hard cider and the Calvados apple brandy that Normandy is known for.
Yeah.
And of course, cheese and seafood and all kinds of stuff.
Just eating and drinking your
exactly.
way.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, maybe I'll go with you guys, stay there, and
there
then.
You know,
except my
perfect.
Kids might not.
Well, you know. Details. For people who are interested in finding out about your trip to Spain, where can they get information?
They can just go right to my website, mywineschool.com. So it's mywineschool.com. And it's right when you, I think the first image that comes up is the link to all the details for the May trip.
Great. And we actually have a link to My Wine School on Facebook.
Well, thank
also.
You.
And so, Jessica, what are you going to be enjoying wine-wise over the holidays?
Oh, man. It's so fun because I just pull out these random weird stuff. So I'll probably definitely have a couple Republic of Georgia wines. I worked with them for a couple years. So I've got some still left over. I'll have to go back, though, and get more because I'm running low.
And for people that don't know, winemaking has been going on in Georgia for thousands of years.
They invented wine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were the first to make wine in the world, and a really amazing food and wine culture, and they've got some really unique wines. So
when I lived in Russia, Georgian wine was like the best of the best. If you could get it.
Yeah, no, they say it's like they're like the Napa to Russia. So Russia is all, you know, that's their vacation and also a wine destination. So we'll be doing a lot of that. And then just some weirdos. I like to do weird wine. So I like to, because really to push, you know, to something new is what I'm always looking for now.
Well, and I know that one red wine that you brought to the show one time, and that is on the wine list at your sister's restaurant, Bavette, is it a Serbian wine, Vranić?
Oh, Vranić. Yeah. No, that is Macedonian.
Macedonian.
Yeah. And that one, if
sorry
you can find
to all the Macedonians.
No, right. Yeah. No, that one is fantastic. I mean, it's such a great price point. I think you could probably find it for $10 to $12 for a bottle. And it is big, deep, dark, and yet not overwhelming.
Right.
And she's had on the list since she opened a year and a half ago and hasn't moved off the list because people love it so
it's
much.
I really enjoyed it a lot. Mm-hmm. And when you think wine, you don't necessarily think Macedonia. So it's great to those weirdos, as you like to call them,
to find out
about those weirdos.
Exactly. Yeah. Seek them out. Ask, if you're looking for that kind of experience, when you go to the retail store or the restaurant, ask. Say, hey, do you have something that's kind of different? Because that's how you're going to be introduced to these new experiences, and it makes wine a lot of fun. And if you don't like it, well, it's just one wine. You know, it's
exactly.
not the end of the world. And you get a little closer to knowing what you do like and also what you don't like.
Well, Jessica, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thanks so much. I know it's a busy time of year with all the holiday stuff we've been talking about.
Right.
But thank you so much.
Well, happy holidays to you and all the listeners out there.
To you too. Jessica Bell is the founder and CEO of My Wine School, based in Chicago and Milwaukee. She joined us from our Milwaukee studios today. So thanks to our colleagues there who set her up and got her ready to go. Well, tasting wines from different regions of the world is one way to be kind of an armchair traveler. But, you know, sometimes you just really want to go directly to those places. And we're in luck because coming up next, Rick Cini of FairCompare.com is with us with great travel advice, as always, and answers to your air travel questions. So I hope you'll stay tuned right here to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.